Hey everybody, how's it going? Thanks for checking out this episode of Lighting the Pipes. It's really good to have you on board for another review. Here today, the focus is going to be Agent of Chaos by Cami Garcia, which is one of two X-Files origin novels commissioned by 20th Century Fox in 2017 and published by Atom Press. Now, the novels look into the leading characters of Fox Mulder and Dana Scully from the popular X-Files TV series, along with Jonathan Mayberry's Devil's Advocate, which relates an earlier chapter in Dana Scully's life. Cami Garcia's text has been accepted as canon by fans, creators, and critics alike. Both origin novels, as I say, were released in January of 2017. So thanks for joining us here on Lighting the Pipes. My name is Scott Powell, and usually this is where I cut over to my co-host, right, Josh Taylor, for just a wee blether, but I'm running solo on this show. I know, just a few weeks ago here, we dropped a review of Hjalmar Soderbergh's Dr. Glass, and we said at the time that another LTP noir would be the next episode. Well, don't worry, that's still coming very soon. I just jumped the queue a little bit here to bring you a shorter episode based on this book. Now, like countless others, maybe even yourself, Josh and I were both really big X-Files fans in our early teens. We used to send each other VHS tapes in the mail back when the show had its initial run on Fox, and we used to clip newspaper and magazine articles for each other. I mean, we lived 1,500 miles apart in Canada, and sending parcels to each other then was a real source of joy for us. I might add that snail mail still is a shared pleasure for the two of us, a distance even further today by an ocean. I still remember, you know, the first time that Josh showed me an episode of the show in his home during a visit there in Peterborough, Ontario, back in 1995. I do digress a little, but we're both X-Files fans. A lot of you listening will also be a fan of the show. And we were interested when, a few years back, news broke out about these two novels. There wasn't a lot of buzz, but there was good buzz, if that makes any sense. I mean, this wasn't something that took the internet by storm. Garcia and Mayberry's publications was a quiet affair. But within sci-fi circles, yeah, you know, there was a bit of buzz about this. But it took us a while to get around to them. And here, I'm reading and doing this first review on my own. Now, it's important, I think, to start from the outset here that both novels are worthy of discussion as police procedurals. And that's kind of how they fit nicely here on Lighting the Pipes. I mean, yeah, okay, Agent of Chaos and Devil's Advocate will cater more heavily to X-Files fans as they add to and answer questions concerning the lore of the character origins that we were occasionally fed throughout the TV series. But these books are game for general readers too. Mulder and Scully aren't necessarily at the center of these novels like you might expect, although they are certainly the protagonists. They rely on and depend on the activities of other characters to get things going. Younger, struggling with their respective pressures and somewhat out of their depth, both characters link up with others as their standalone investigations serve to strengthen their resolves and turn each other towards the FBI. In other words, if they were just character pieces for devotees of the show, we'd probably not be bothering with them here on Lighting the Pipes. Not that there's anything wrong with that, simply that we just try to select and really want to share on the show an approachable cross-section of what's out there. I guess you could consider this then a peripheral choice for the show, kind of like a borderland text, I guess. But I'm really excited to be talking about it. You know, it's interesting. During the X-Files original run, Josh was certainly the more comprehensive fan, and he had read Kevin J. Anderson's novels, titles like Antibodies, Ruins, Ground Zero, you may be familiar with those. But since the show ended, I think I probably kept the fire burning for the X-Files a little heavier than he has. Helped along, it needs to be said, by my wife, who's a big fan. In any event, I picked these two origin novels up recently, and he, alas, did not. Hence why I'm running solo here on the first of two reviews. We'll get round to talking about Mayberry's book a little bit later in the year, and perhaps Josh will come on board for that one. Now, because these books are written about teenage Mulder and Scully, and follow their exploits as younger people, It's fair to say that part of 20th Century Fox's ambition in backing Garcia and Maybury here had a lot to do with luring in a new generation of sharp sci-fi fans, and conspiracy theorists too, perhaps. Now, these are relatively quick reads, these two books, and they're geared to an older, younger audience. I think it's fair to say, if that makes any sense. So think more 16 to 25 instead of 10 to 17, and you'll probably be in the right neighborhood for where these books were kind of targeted. So I managed to read Agent of Chaos fairly quickly during a recent holiday from work, and I decided to take advantage of that opportunity to add a little more content for your ears. Thanks again for checking in. If you like the show, remember, please share it with other people so that they can discover it as well. The more reading we get done as a community, the better for everyone, I think. Anyway, I really do hope you enjoy this solo ride. It is something a bit different for us here on the show. It's a little bit shorter than our regular episodes too, so that might be favorable for you. I'll complete the circle, as I say, with Maybury's book a little bit later in the year. But for now, yeah, let's get into it. Agent of Chaos by Cami Garcia. Okay, so on to fast facts. This is usually the feature in our shows where Josh takes over. And full disclosure here, people, I am not coming to the table with a deep, deserving fast facts feature. Josh's steadfast spirit of deep diving into historical and biographical context, it's really being let down, I know. I apologize to those of you who were expecting his predictable flair and filleting of actual factuals. I also apologize to Cami Garcia, should she be listening. We all know that you amount to so much more than this very brief survey of facts, but here we go. Cami Garcia is a New York Times best-selling author, born on the 25th of March, 1972. She grew up in Washington, D.C., but now lives in Los Angeles. She's a teacher and a lecturer and does some pretty cool work with literacy and reading. By all accounts, she seems like a pretty cool ambassador for literacy in general. Now, I'm going to read directly from Garcia's own website here. She's the co-author of the Beautiful Creatures and Dangerous Creatures series, and the author of 5 solo novels, including her Bram Stoker Award-nominated novels Unbreakable and Unmarked from the Legion series, and of course this, the X-Files Origins Agent of Chaos that we're discussing today. Now, Cami's also a talented comic book writer and teamed up with artists to produce work for DC Comics. Beautiful Creatures, probably her best-known work, has been published in 51 countries and translated into 37 languages. The series has over 10 million copies in print, was a finalist for the ALA William C. Morris Debut Award, a Skiba Award finalist, Amazon's number one teen book of 2009, and is number 5 on editor's top 100 lists, a Yalsa teen top 10 pick, and a New York Public Library's Book for the Teenage selection. The film adaptation, Beautiful Creatures, was released in theaters in 2013 from Warner Brothers. Cami co-founded YalFest, the biggest teen book festival in the country, which is held annually in Charleston, South Carolina. She's a board member of YalFest and YalWest, which is a sister festival in Santa Monica, California. She is the YalWest Purple Ink Awards Committee Chair, an award established in her honor to fund classroom libraries in underfunded Los Angeles schools. Cami volunteers her time with the nonprofit group's Write Girl, a creative writing and mentoring organization for girls that awarded her a 2012 Bold Ink Award, a National Novel Writing Month, as a member of the Writers Board, and Gilda's Club as a judge for their annual teen writing competition. Cami has an MA in education and was a teacher for 17 years before co-authoring her first novel on a dare from 7 of her students. Hey, I tell you what, that takes a lot of guts, huh? Writing a book because your students dare that you can't do it, or they challenge you to do it. As a classroom teacher myself, full credit to Cami Garcia for taking that challenge on. I really, really respect that. And well done, you know, building a career from something like that, from your kids challenging you in the classroom. That's really cool. Anyway, as I think these fast facts, which were very quick, outline. She really is a pretty interesting figure for young adult reading, writing, and the appreciation of the art and of literacy more generally. So well done there, Cami Garcia. And again, apologies to listeners and to the author. A quicker sort of feature today, but nevertheless important, I think, in laying out the basics for this talented writer. All right, now let's shuffle into a plot summary. This is usually my remit on the show, so sit back, relax, and I'll bring you through the strokes of the narrative. Hope you enjoy. So, Agent of Chaos begins in Washington, D.C. in 1979, where 17-year-old Fox Mulder is exiting school with his pal Gimble. Now, he's being observed from a distance by two men who are kind of suspicious in this car, and they're having a conversation. Fans of the show will recognize these characters as X and Cigarette Smoking Man, but you don't need to know that in order to understand that Mulder's under surveillance. Now, Fox Mulder is mourning the disappearance of his sister, Samantha, who was abducted 5 years earlier. Samantha was kidnapped from her home while Fox was looking after her as an older brother, so he feels a real sense of responsibility. He is haunted by reflections, what-ifs, and insomnia. Samantha's disappearance drove a wedge between his parents, which was helped along by his father's workaholism. And Fox is living with his dad just now, following his parents' divorce. Mum, still living in Martha's Vineyard, thought that Fox spending time with his dad might help make the transition easier. It doesn't really seem to be working for either of them. Mulder misses his best friend, Phoebe, with whom he shares an on-again, off-again romance. His mother is pining after her son, and his father always seems to be picking for a fight. So yeah, things aren't so good at the beginning of this story. The pressure is on Fox to make up his mind about what he will do after graduating as well. His father is insisting upon Georgetown University, but Fox is less convinced. Gimble, Mulder's friend, is a Dungeons & Dragons enthusiast with a generous disposition. His father is an interesting figure in this book. He plays a heavy part in it as well. Known as the Major, William Wyatt Winchester is a retired major from the United States Air Force and a devotee to conspiracy theories. His wife, Gimble's mom, died recently in a car accident, and he lives out a daily paranoid existence, which is punctuated by ritualized television schedules, code words, and suspicion of nearly everything mainstream. Garcia wastes very little time in linking these three characters, Fox, Gimble, and the Major, by their shared trauma. Throughout the novel, in fact, the Major's idiosyncrasies, including his fascination with the fantasy book series Stormbringer, based around ideas of chaos and law, will really come in and out of play. Hanging over the Washington, D.C. area right now is a fearful spate of kidnappings and child disappearances. This, of course, amplifies Fox Mulder's emotional state, as in these news stories just keep putting the Samantha failure straight in front of him. The victims are all 8 years of age, which is the same age Samantha was when she was taken as well. Now this is the narrative dressing, or like the set decoration, if you will, that motivates the principal action of Cami Garcia's origin story. Having lost a sister under similar conditions, and at a similar age 5 years ago, we see Mulder's crusade in the television series being given some early fertilizer here. As Samantha was never recovered, he's desperate to find a connection between what's going on with these current kidnappings and what happened then, when his sister was taken from him. While out on a run, Mulder catches sight of a forensic tent and police activity buzzing around a cemetery. Through the trees, he gets a good look at the body of a young boy, William Christian, which is decorated in occultist fare. A magpie is pierced by 8 arrows, which is placed very carefully on the boy's chest. Now, thanks to Mulder's photographic memory, Fox also notices what the boy is wearing, and he recalls sight of the exact same elephant pajamas on another missing girl, Sarah Lowe, whose photo has been on the television in the last couple of days. Now, the police aren't really interested in Mulder's tip or his suspicions of a connection. They arbitrarily refuse to see a connection brought to them by a 17-year-old boy. And there is a little bit of creative license here, a little bit of suspending your disbelief, because the police kind of brush Mulder off and treat him like just another, like just a stupid teenager when, you know, he's trying to help out their investigation. But this is also kind of necessary for Mulder to go rogue and to start not trusting the local law enforcement, which, of course, is a theme that is bred out in the television series as well. It's about this time in the story that Phoebe, Mulder's best pal, arrives from Martha's Vineyard to visit. Bill Mulder is away on work in New Mexico with the State Department. The precise nature of this work is left deliberately vague, but that's keeping in what is later revealed as a syndicate affiliation and the cover-up of extraterrestrials and everything else that comes through the television program. So for fans of the show, knowing that Bill Mulder is in New Mexico is enough for us to know that he's up to, you know, the secret covert work. Now, Phoebe is a really spunky and determined partner for Mulder. Their attraction is believable on the page. She cares for him as a friend and as more, and she's brought fully into the story along with Gimble. Together, the three pals set out to do what they can to connect the dots that Mulder insists upon being there with these recent kidnappings. They're both keenly aware that Mulder is fanatical about these disappearances. Encouraged by the possibilities of the occult evidence, they take matters into their own hands. So Mulder, this time with Phoebe, returns to the police station and, with a good helping of luck, manages to see the investigation board, which is complete with a coroner's report and more detailed photos of the William Christian crime scene. Now, in addition to the pierced magpie, bones, stones, and poison were also involved in the setting of this young boy's death. And so the three friends then head to Georgetown University Library for a spate of good old-fashioned academic research. So we got a little bit of Buffy the Vampire Slayer going on here with the library and the research. We've got a little bit of even kind of Scooby-Doo vibes happening here at this point in the book. None of it is bad. It's all of context and believable, and it's decorated within the late 70s, early 80s culture fabric as well. Lots of Star Trek, lots of Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica even fills in, and of course, the Major's own fascination with the Stormbringer novel series. A fantasy created for the book, but still in that kind of milieu of Dungeons and Dragons and science fiction fantasy stuff, yeah? Well, during their research, they uncover connections between poisonous plants and mythical stones, all of which leads them to a New Age shop in Maryland. And there, they hope to find some answers and start formulating a list of potential suspects. Even though he's unaware of it at the time, we can see that Mulder is in the opening throes of psychological profiling here. At the shop, which they drive to, which is aptly named Beyond and Beyond, Mulder and Gimble browse and mingle, but it's Phoebe who really takes the lead with a group known as the Illuminates of Thanateros, or Thanateros if you prefer, and she accepts an invitation to their meeting, which is conveniently just about to start in an annexed room off the back of the shop. As they enter the little room, everybody is shocked, Mulder most of all, when the bird and arrow symbol that was found on William Christian is boldly crested on the wall. Now, this confirms a lot to Fox Mulder, of course. He knows they're getting close to locating a guilty party. As with the Stormbringer book, so heavily touted by the Major, this group meeting focuses an awful lot on chaos and order, with different participants engaging and discussing rituals using stones and unorthodox doctrine to achieve this greater sense of cosmic balance. Through some skillful bluffing and a few strategic gestures, Phoebe succeeds in learning about an ex-member of the group named Earl Roy, who left after his practicing of dark magic was discovered. Roy also works at a garden center, they learn, which would put him in perfect position to obtain wider toxic botanicals. So the trio leave with his address. Now, by 200 pages in the book, which is about where we are at this point, Mulder's obsession is fully overpowering and it's driving the plot. Fans of the show will remember just how frequently Mulder's hunches turned out to be right, and it's not long before his impatience and his reckless abandon here leads him directly to the kidnapper. More than a little unprepared, though, they head for the rural Maryland address and discover a dilapidated home, eerily accented by a plethora of tricycles in the yard. Very ghastly scene, that one. Mulder rushes in, against the better judgment of his pals, and he is soon apprehended, after Garcia gives us a few creepy descriptions of interior decoration. She writes well here, kind of conjuring up the Norman Bates kind of feel from Psycho and other sort of perhaps more contemporary horrors that a young audience reading the book would be able to recognize. So Mulder wakes up in the basement, trapped inside of a dog pen, and soon meets the mentally disturbed Earl Roy. Roy is painted white and looks every part the psychopath. Unconscious and strapped to a tinsel-strewn chair is 8-year-old Sarah Lowe. So Mulder was right. He found the girl, and she's still alive. He is unnaturally calm throughout this ordeal, despite the obvious peril facing him, and he engages with Earl Roy over the finer points of order and chaos, a la Stormbringer. So he's using what the Major was pushing on him as this sort of fanatical novel, and this does buy him some critical time, as we learn that X has been pursuing Mulder. And while X opts not to intervene and reveal himself, he does call the police upon entering Roy's home, and then disappears into the shadows, like he did many times on the TV show. By accidentally cutting himself, Mulder discovers that Roy suffers from an intense hemophobia, which creates serious doubts about his ability to kill. As if hit by kryptonite, the sight of Mulder's blood causes Roy's unraveling, which is timed quite expertly with the cops showing up. Given his phobia, it's now more likely than ever that Roy wasn't working alone. Sarah Lowe is saved, and the kidnapper is apprehended. Mulder didn't find out the truth about his sister from Roy, but being able to return this missing girl to her family has started to fill part of the hole left by Samantha's disappearance. And so, on to the denouement. All three kids are set to meet with federal authorities about their work on the case. During his follow-up interview with the FBI, Mulder impresses Special Agent Ressler with his resourcefulness and his candor, and Ressler informs Mulder that were he of age, he'd hire him. More than that, though, he tells Mulder that his notes on the kidnapping and the cases are among the best examples of profiling that he's come across. The word is a new one for Mulder, and as the investigation was really fulfilling for him, Mulder inquires and learns that Oxford University and psychology is what he might want to be looking at if he would ever consider pursuing a career in the behavioral science and profiling. So Cami Garcia then ends her novel in prototypical X-Files fashion, with X sneaking into the Major's house under instructions from his cigarette-smoking boss. X neutralizes William Wyatt Winchester and the threat he poses to the truth. Though it is sad to see an interesting character go down, it is also satisfying to know that the Major's influence on Mulder throughout the novel was particularly grounded. You know, at the beginning, we're led to believe that this guy is just crazy, he's suffering trauma from his wife's death, also perhaps whatever PTSD has come from his services in the Air Force, but now we see that actually the Major had a pretty unique blend of paranoia and enforced discipline that stood for something real. Real enough that X was sent in to destroy it. And so, Agent of Chaos ends, not with an answer to what happened to Samantha, but instead, Fox Mulder's star rising in official circles. Mulder is turned on to the idea of studying psychology, and also of perhaps joining the FBI someday. He's certainly been encouraged in that direction. And so, Agent of Chaos ends with Fox Mulder's star rising in official circles. As for Teenage Scully, we'll talk about that later this year when we look at Jonathan Mayberry's Devil's Advocate. Okay, so on to the scoring, the review itself. Josh and I use on the show the acronym PIPES. Regular listeners will know what this is all about. The first P stands for the printable character, the I for investigation, the second P for perpetrators, the E for environs, and the S for secondary or supporting characters. And what we do with these, we give each one a mark out of 5, and that together gives us an index that we use for grading and for ranking our stories here on the show. So for Agent of Chaos, the principal character, our first category, is Fox Mulder. We're given an accurate, if brooding, sketch of this guy, I think. It was fun. It was fun to see the 17-year-old Mulder get kind of defensive about science fiction and other aspects of culture at the time. But Garcia's rendering of him, I think, is pretty thin in the book. Some of his later character trademarks are certainly touched on by the writing, like his insomnia, his righteousness is definitely here, his oral fixation for sunflower seeds, we learn where that comes from in the book, but he is so driven by the loss of his sister that everything else seems to fall back or kind of beneath this character point, you know? Samantha's disappearance accounts for nearly all of Mulder's trauma in this story, and it probably feeds into, and takes from, the negative relationship he's got with his dad, you know? But I don't want to make it sound like this is a major weakness in the book, because it helps, I think, to have the character's mission, if you will, his drive, connected to his trauma. You know, Mulder is so passionate about and interested in this spate of kidnappings because it connects with him personally. And so Garcia has managed to match, I think, the context within the text to the character's interior landscape. Yeah, if that makes any sense. Kind of that emotional pull is also manifested within the news and the media of the time and of the, you know, the context of these really horrendous child abductions. He is described, you know, by Garcia as obsessive, sarcastic, and angry, really. There's not a lot of warmth that comes from him. Curiously, I think, at least I found, that he seemed to be most at peace in the story when he was talking with the Major, who everyone else considers to be a crackpot, you know. Or perhaps at the end when he's talking to the FBI agent Wrestler, he seems quite at peace there. When he is engaging romantically with Phoebe, it doesn't really feel like it's more like a release than it is a love. And I think Garcia writes this stuff quite maturely because Mulder is aware that he's taking advantage of her and of the relationship to get this kind of quick fix. But we have also a really good impetuous writing that matches teenage hormones and, you know, like not being able to say what you know you should say, which is, I'm sorry, or I do have feelings for you, or it's not what you think. Yeah, I mean, I think she does a good job of capturing some real teenage angst within the kind of muted moments where Mulder stuffs his hands in his pockets, or he's acting a bit sullen at the table, or he decides not to eat because he's in a bad mood, or he wants his friends to kind of know that he's pissed off or whatever, you know? I think she does write these moments believably, and I credit her for that. But yeah, there's not really much in the way of happiness with Fox Mulder in this story. And that's interesting too, because Gimble, his buddy, has equal if not greater trauma to Mulder, having lost his mum, and also finds himself caring for a very disturbed father. But Mulder's tunnel vision wins out here in the book, just like it always seems to be prioritized, or preferenced, I should say, in the television series as well, you know. When it comes to his photographic memory, I found this quite an interesting part of his character. Garcia describes Mulder as a bit of a superhero, and that's weird. Like, he has access to a realm of memory recall and precision that the rest of us can only imagine. Now, this is not how photographic memory works, of course. That and eidetic memories are very unique. And yes, of course, there is a a gift that comes with them, but they can also be a curse. And I don't feel like the curse side of a photographic memory really comes out too much in the text. It's more like a weapon that he's able to use to unlock things, doors, keys, opportunities, clues, yeah, stuff like that. So I think I would have liked to have seen a little bit more give and take with that photographic memory. But, you know, it also, I think, stood out for me the most because it's not a feature of his character that was called out in the television series at all. Or rather, if it was mentioned, it was never exaggerated like it is here in the text. Maybe it's a young adult thing. I don't really know. I don't know if she wanted to give her character at 17 years of age another thing that made him interesting. Not just the trauma, but something positive, like a power, yeah? Given how Garcia is drawn to and quite successful in writing other fantasy stories, I think I could be onto something there. But nevertheless, a little bit of that was okay. It didn't really detract too much from my enjoyment of the character. But Fox Mulder in this book is overall a gloomy guy. He's despondent, doesn't eat much, he sleeps even less, but he still manages to look good, be acute in his thinking, and service his calling, ultimately, and solve a crime. So yeah, that's pretty cool. And he puts egg on the face of the local police detectives, you know, which he does time and time again in the television series too. So I think she's done a good job here in this young adult novel of bringing us his character to life. Is it perfect? No, it's not perfect. Would I have liked to see more of this and less of that? A bit more with his mother, yes. A little bit more with his father. He seems to really hate his father in this book. And that's not really the way it's portrayed to us in the story. He has a more compassionate relationship with his dad in the story of the television show. And I would like to have seen a little bit of compassion come out there. But again, 17 years old, you know. In the years between 17 and the first episode, maybe, you know, there's room for things to have improved with his dad so that when we pick up that storyline in the TV, maybe we can imagine that he has grown a little bit away from the anger towards his dad and has learned to see him, I guess, a bit differently. I think we have to give the book that benefit of the doubt. This is just a snapshot of Fox Mulder at one point in his life, so we mustn't be wanting all things from a single text, I think. So overall, Fox Mulder, yeah, he was good. He was okay in this book. I went for 3.5 out of 5. Now on to the investigation. Like I said earlier, this is a linear procedural. Okay, it's not a police procedural because it doesn't follow the police detectives or, you know, doing police work. It's more like a Scooby-Doo meets Buffy kind of procedural with, of course, X-Files procedural wrapped in. And adult trauma, which adds the muscle and the heft to the reading experience and to the characterization. It certainly does help if you know the character of Fox Mulder, or the other canon peripherals like Cigarette Smoking Man and X, Bill Mulder and Tina as well, I guess. But generally, everything is told to us here on the page that we need to enjoy the story. So general readers aren't really put out too much, I don't think, by not having an in-depth knowledge of, you know, the character. Now, readers familiar with Stephen King's kind of child stories, like It, Carrie, or even Firestarter, I think, or I guess Stand By Me, you know, the short story that inspired the film, they'll probably notice that Garcia is dealing with, or I guess using, similar ingredients in conjuring the atmosphere of the story. She never oversteps into that type of Stephen King writing. She never makes it more about the friendship than the case, or, you know, that. But again, it fits the context of publication and certainly the character's experienced culture of the time, I think. There is a bit of that camaraderie going on here. And also the suggestion that Stephen King, I think, really heavily builds in his stories about how young people are great sources of power. I think that's something that does come out of here, you know, neglected, overlooked sources of power. We're aware at the very start that X and Cigarette Smoking Man are watching Mulder and we get confirmation of that, including some involvement directly from X in the later stages of the book. Then removing evidence from the crazy major. Like, it all plays out a bit like Syndicate stuff does on the show, and I was believing it. I was into it, and I liked how the character of the major was validated by X's involvement at the end of the story. I thought that was really good because, yeah, it fits with what we get in terms of mythology later on, but also I think it's nice to have these lesser respected characters still really strong, you know what I mean? And the way that Fox benefits from the relationship of the major and his inclusion in the story, I think is really cool. I liked it. I thought it was interesting. And as for that supervision or that surveillance work that X and his boss, Smoking Man, are doing on Mulder, readers are made clearly aware by Garcia that Fox strikes both of those men as somebody to watch. I think the last line in the book is that Mulder, not only, you know, because of his work in the investigation with Sarah Lau and managing to uncover what happened with William Christian and whatnot, but I think the last line of the book is belief has its uses, which of course tracks really well with what we see later in the series. The love story here between Phoebe and Mulder, I'm not even calling it a love story. It's more of a romance. It's more of a lust. It's a friendship with benefits. And it feels a bit wedged in there, okay, to be perfectly honest. Phoebe is a great character. I like her power. I like her strength. I like her autonomy. We don't exactly mind to see Mulder driven by urges. I mean, he's a 17-year-old boy after all. But it does feel a little separate from the character that we meet and follow in the show later. Garcia, cleverly, I think, includes the plot for the sake of her younger readers. I think it helps to give the character a not just this kind of adult passion and obsession, discovering what happened to his sister, but also the love lust of a teenage boy, yeah, and description of legs and hair and backside and all of that. Like, it is what it is. It's there for a reason. It's sexualized because, yeah, teenage life is sexualized, right? It needs to be in there, I guess. And plus, in a story, you know, without any Scully or Shipper tension, yeah, it serves a purpose, doesn't it? But as for a young adult novel, I think that the narrative investigation works. X-Files fans won't be too disappointed. I think they may pick at stuff, but really? Too much criticism of the narrative is disingenuous here, guys. Cami Garcia does a good job creating a story that feels like a solid standalone episode of the X-Files, but which is layered with these early compelling mythological strokes. So I'm into it. Yeah, I'm into this. I liked the book. For what it was, I thought it was successful. I thought it was engaging. It's not setting out to be an adult investigation or a crime classic, so insincere trying to compare it like for like with something more classic or profound in the world of adult crime fiction. It's not a perfect story, but it's an engaging one. And it's well written. It doesn't pander to young readers or look down at them. I think it has that right balance of darkness, action, and redemption that a young person enjoys, you know? I'm a high school English teacher. I think they'd be interested in this book. But it also services the older readers and the fans of the story of the X-Files without kind of force-feeding too much. It's subtle, and its nuances were, at least by this fan, well-received. I like it. It's got a good smattering of strong female and male characters. So I support this one. Yeah, I'm in favor of this. I gave it a 4 out of 5 for investigation. As for the perpetrator, well, Earl Roy is the kidnapper and the killer. He is certainly a less complex villain than we would get in a more comprehensive text, but all the lines meet up here. He is what he is. For a young adult perp, I think he's sufficient. His visual presence is really bold when he appears in the one scene that we get him in. And his fearsomeness lives in that zealous belief in the balance of chaos and law that is described in the books, the Stormbringer books, proffered by the Major. Curiously, you know, I can't help but wonder if Garcia is saying something about fandom at this point in cultural history, you know, late 70s, early 80s, Star Wars, Dungeons and Dragons, Star Trek. I wonder if, like, she's saying something about how culture is breeding this new sort of manic fan. Certainly Earl Roy grows obsessive and disjointed about what he reads as principles of life within these fantasy novels, and then he goes out and he tries to enact his own law and order in the world. And you think about Star Wars and the Church of Jedi, you know, I mean, I think she could be onto something here. Mulder's own obsession and his later devotion to conspiracy. There are some parallels here, I think, between the perpetrator and the principal character that could warrant further study. But yeah, I mean, without going too far into it, Earl Roy is what it says on the tin. He's a psycho. Montgomery props, another perpetrator. He's the older brother, the invisible brother in the story, the half-brother who is presumably doing the bloody parts of the kidnapping and killing because of Earl's hemophobia. Then, of course, we've got X and Cigarette Smoking Man, who are these kind of shadowy figures, just as they are in the series, part of a bigger plot that's interested in Mulder and, of course, his family. Then there is Mulder's family. I don't think we can get away with viewing Bill Mulder as a perpetrator because he is an antagonist to his son's emotional health, at least as it's presented in the story. And so there's that as well. You know, there's that element of kind of antagonism going on. But overall, the perpetrators, yeah, they were okay. They were okay in the book. You know, it's not the best part of the story, but it's certainly not poorly done for a young adult novel. I went for a 3 overall. I'd like to have seen more with Earl Roy. I thought the one scene that he and Mulder shared was really interesting, but it would have been good to get a bit more out of him as a character that wasn't all wrapped up in the Stormbringer stuff. You know, Mulder figures out pretty quickly that if he talks to Earl with this knowledgeable lexicon of fantasy terms and Stormbringer language, that he'll be able to break down Roy and buy time. And it does work, but I'd have liked to see a couple of extra scenes or, you know, something else. There's something else. I just think a bit more of Earl in the book would have been good. Maybe a scene with the police officers who gave Mulder a hard time. That would have been interesting too, you know, just to get a bit more of that the conflict in the book. In terms of environment, well, I think I've already kind of touched on this one, you know. There's some effort here to recreate the late 1970s with the Star Wars, the Star Trek, D&D, Battlestar Galactica. Plus, there's lots of TV and radio references as well to songs and shows and advertising campaigns. As you read, you can visualize the world of the book and the settings that the characters are in. But it's kind of macro. There's not a lot of micro development of location in this book. It's quite refreshing not to have today's technology worked into a story. Like, Mulder and his friends use libraries and their instincts instead of their devices. And yeah, okay, fair enough. It's necessary for context, but that doesn't take away from it being refreshing. There's some cool individual places, I guess, like the New Age, the Mystic Shop, and the Meeting Room. The home of Earl Roy is kind of described as Mulder enters it, and again, X, being a weird sort of preserved antique space, plus the tricycles piled up, you know, which signal or telegraph his involvement with children. That awkward gold furniture, which is really fastidiously wrapped and preserved. There's some creepy elements here and some neat settings in the book for sure, but they are few and far between. They're highlight points instead of kind of consistent brushstrokes. But yeah, it was okay. You know, the environment of this book was okay. Definitely passing. I gave this a 3. And that moves us on then to the supporting or secondary characters. This book's got a lot of them. We have the characters of Phoebe and Gimble, or Gary Winchester, who feed into Mulder's campaign and team up with him. and they become a good unit. They're both interesting in their own way, for their own reasons, their own trauma. Phoebe is a little bit less developed in terms of her backstory. She's more assertive. She's more aggressive in getting work done and takes matters into her own hands a bit. And I like that. I like how she plays stronger fiddle to Fox's second fiddle on several points in the story. And that works really well to demonstrate, to show how they're a good partnership. Yeah. And of course, partnership is a big part of the X-Files and a big reason for its success. William Wyatt Winchester, the major of the 128th Recon Squadron of the United States Air Force. This guy's really cool. Like, he's a really cool character. Forget young adult fiction, forget whatever, just in general. He's a neat character. He'd be really cool to see in an episode of the X-Files or expanded in a different story. I like the duplicity of him, if that's the right word. I like how it's not just what you see is what you get, but what you get is also a lot more of what you should see. And there's a really cool thing about him. I found him really interesting, compelling. I like the fact that his obsession with these stories seems to be the thing that we're meant to look at, but actually he has these other things as well that we learn of later, like the connections. This guy Sergio, who is his connection, and he gives Mulder the phone number if he's stuck in trouble. Look at this guy, and how X then has to go in at the end and kind of get rid of all the evidence, but he's done this really neat thing by making copies of the portfolio that he wants. He can't get it, so it's, yeah, this guy's cool. He's cool because his paranoia amounts to much more than just his paranoia, and he's a big enough threat to be erased at the end of the text. He's really neat. Special Agent Robert Ressler, the man who believes Mulder, ultimately and finally believes in what Mulder is saying. He's the same one that encourages him towards profiling and gives us our kind of springboard into what happens after the book. He's cool. He's cool. Like, it'd be nice to have seen him or heard of him a little bit earlier, but at the same time, I understand why he came into the story at the end and only at the end. You know, he helps Mulder and is an important link in the chain of his professional development. We've also got Corinda Howell. She's a psychic and the shop owner of Beyond and Beyond. She's okay, you know, she's new age. There's not much beyond what you get on the surface with her. She is a means to an end, opens up a door, literally and figuratively, allowing Mulder into that late stage of his investigation. And that's cool. She plays her part in the story. But it is a plot point. And then there's Mulder's parents. Yeah, we mentioned Bill Mulder as that persistent antagonist in the novel already. Fox does not think that being with his dad is the best thing. There's not a lot of love here, at least not in how Garcia writes it. Other characters tell us that Bill Mulder means well, and that he's trying his best, and that he's grieving too, and whatnot. But usually these are men who are also wrapped up in the secrets of their own conspiratorial work, telling us that Bill's a good guy, so we're doubting everything we hear about him as well. He's a bit more than a cold jerk, though, in the novel, and that is important to say, but not by much. Fans of the show, like I was saying, will remember Mulder's character being a bit more compassionately rendered. There is a contrast here. Peter Donat, who was the actor who played him so wonderfully on the show, there's no sniff of that guy or his performance in what we get as a literary character. Bill Mulder, 5 years after the disappearance of his daughter and shortly after the divorce with his wife, Tina, he's not a nice man. Let's just leave it at that. As for his wife, Tina, she's only in two or three scenes and briefly phone calls or kind of concerned conversations. She's a fairly absent figure here in the story, but that's a product of where the character is historically. He's away from his mom right now, so she's not going to play as big a part in the story. She's portrayed as pretty fragile, cosseting really. But overall, the secondary characters are interesting here. I gave him a 3.5 in total. So overall, you know, adding up my scores, I've got a 17 out of 25 for Agent of Chaos. I don't know. I don't know if that score reflects my enjoyment of the book. It was fun to read this in between some of our more serious books, some of our heftier books on the show recently. And it was nice to get back into the X-Files world again, you know, the milieu of conspiracies and extraterrestrials, although they're only mentioned tangentially in the text. But it was cool to be here, and it was believable to be here. I think what Cammy Garcia's succeeded in doing is giving us a believable look at a young character who turns out to be something a little bit more than what we see here, but whose blueprint is still sufficiently laid out on the page. And in doing that, she gives us a fun young adult adventure with a lot of darkness and the adult trauma that will engage older readers as well. So, yeah, well done, Cammy Garcia. And later this year, we'll crack the cover on Jonathan Mayberry's Devil's Advocate and bring a short review to you for that one. And hopefully I'll be able to get Josh on board and reading that too. So yeah, thanks for checking out this episode, everybody. You can find our stuff on the socials at pipes_pod on Instagram, and you can email us at lightingpipes@gmail.com. Let us know what you're reading. If you are an X-Files fan, what did you think of this book? And if you aren't an X-Files fan but still read the book, how did it work in your mind as a standalone text? Thanks for checking out this solo ride, guys. I appreciate you being on board. If you like what we do here on Lighting the Pipes, please give us a review online. Help others like yourself find our show, share it with your pals, and together we'll continue to take this journey of good reading into crime and detective fiction. We'll see you back here soon on Lighting the Pipes for some film noir with Josh. Take care, everyone, and happy reading.